Hello, and welcome to the Queen's Observatory Fast Radio Bursts. I am Connor Stone, here with my co-host, Nikhil Arora. It is our mission to bring exciting space news hot off the telescope and into your ears. One way or another, the Queen's Observatory has continued its practice of sharing the wonders of the universe since 1857. Thank you for joining us in this long-running tradition. Here at Fast Radio Bursts, we will answer your questions, interview astronomers, and dive deep into breaking research. From low Earth orbit to the clouds of Venus, from Betelgeuse to colliding black holes, it's a big universe to talk about, so let's get started.
And welcome back to Queen's Observatory's Fast Radio Burst. I am your host, Nick Arora, and here with me is Connor Stone. Connor, how are you doing today?
I'm good. How are you?
I am great as well. We are continuing our discussions or a walk through the history of the universe and called a Universal Chronicle. That's what we're going to do today. The plan today is to really talk about the mysterious Middle Ages of the universe, the least known part, the least known time period of the universe with physics. We quite understand the beginnings and the current state of the universe, but really like a billion to close to 2-3 billion years, there's not much that we know of, and we need more data and understanding of that. So that's what we're going to talk about today. However, maybe some sad or and maybe also good news is this is going to be the last series by us. Moving forward, there, as I mentioned in the last episode, there are changes happening to the Queen's Observatory. So as far as science series go, this will be the last episode, but we will come back for one more episode and talk about those changes, talk about what's happening at the Queen's Observatory.
Exciting and interesting stuff.
Exactly. Exciting and interesting, to say the least. Let's get back to chronicling our universe. To set the stage, we left off after a very busy beginning of the universe with sort of everything just bouncing around, and finally the universe cooled down enough so that protons and electrons could combine and actually form elements that we know of today, such as hydrogen, helium, and lithium. The universe became transparent so that we could actually see it from our vantage point. Sounds like there's plenty of light to go around. So why are we titling this episode The Dark Ages, Connor?
It's a good question. And there certainly is lots of light whizzing around the universe at this point, but there won't be any new light for a while. So at about 300,000 years after the Big Bang, the universe would be a balmy 3,500 degrees Celsius, and the entire universe would kind of look like the region just above the surface of the sun. Blindingly bright, but uniform in its spectrum. There's sort of one black body spectrum. If you've ever seen like a piece of metal heated up until it starts glowing, heated up a lot further to 3,500 degrees, and that color coming off of it would be the same as the whole universe at that point.
It's like white hot.
Yeah, white hot. So it's certainly not dark at this point, and for the next few million years, but there's no new light being formed. All of that light that's streaming around has been there since that 300,000 years cutoff point. Nothing new is happening. It's the Dark Ages, kind of because it's boring. There's nothing new happening in the universe. But there is sort of something subtle going on for the next few million years. During inflation, tiny little quantum fluctuations would have been sort of baked into the universe. And those fluctuations are regions that are slightly hotter, slightly higher density. And over time, the higher density regions will pull more material into them. You start to get a little bit extra gravity in one place, pulling material from regions that are slightly lower density. This would continue on slowly for hundreds of millions of years, pulling material closer and closer together, piling it and compressing it into what we would call the first galaxies, and eventually pulling the gas even closer together to the point where we would get the first stars. So this would be happening somewhere. Again, this is one of the least understood parts of the universe, but somewhere in the ballpark of 200 to 400 million years after the beginning of the universe would have cooled to very low, minus 200 degrees Celsius. So we've come a long way from 1,000 trillion degrees we had early in the last episode, now at minus 200 degrees Celsius, or like 70 or so degrees Kelvin. So this is the point where we would start to form the first stars, where the dark ages would kind of end and new light would be created in the universe for the first time in quite a while.
Well, the first stars have formed. I guess this is a big milestone, or should I say the time stone in the history of the universe. The universe has finally gone from being a plasma soup, which was essentially the same thing down to 1/10,000th of a degree, into structures. We are now seeing stars. Do these stars look the way they do as we look at in the night sky, Connor?
Right. So they, in fact, would look pretty different. You may recall that we mentioned the universe at this stage is filled pretty much exclusively with hydrogen and helium and a little bit of lithium. And the universe being entirely made up of these gases has a really particular effect on the kinds of stars that would form. First up, it means that the gas that these stars would have formed from would have cooled very slowly. So in order to get a star, you have to have a cloud of gas cool down and collapse into a very tight, compact space, which at the individual particle level, the temperature is basically just kinetic energy. How fast is that particle moving around? And for complex molecules, it's relatively easy for them to convert that kinetic energy into some other form of energy so that they can slow down and fall in towards the center of where the gravity is. For example, a complex molecule can start to wiggle, or it can spin, or you can break it apart. All of these things take up energy, but don't get it moving really fast. So they're able to cool down and collapse into the star faster. But simple atoms like hydrogen and helium and lithium that are just on their own whizzing around the universe, they're more like billiard balls. When they bounce off each other, they just bounce. They keep going at the same speed pretty much. So it takes them a lot longer to cool down. So the first generation of stars would have had sort of strange formation periods that would have taken a long time to happen. Now, the second thing that would be very different about these stars is, again, we're on very uncertain territory here because these first stars are entirely created by models. We've never observed them before. So these are all just hypotheses at this point, and there's people working on trying to study them. But anyway, the first generation of stars would have only had hydrogen and helium to power their fusion, despite being an enormous size, something like 1,000 times the mass of our sun. The biggest stars we see in the night sky are like almost 100 times the mass of our sun. So this is gigantic. These megastars would be very different from our sun, from any of the stars that we see in the night sky. And their fate would be sort of sealed the moment that they are born because of their gigantic size. But I think we should put... Nick, you always jump to it. But, but I think we're going to put a pin in that for now because that's going to come back later. The important thing is we have these stars. They're big and they're kind of different from the stars that we know of today.
All right. To my dissatisfaction, might I say, let's save the star deaths for a bit later, but we will come back to them. Okay. Now let's just talk about what did these stars do while they were alive. I mean, they are 1,000 times the mass of our sun, so they must have some kind of an effect on the universe. So Connor, could you lead us through that?
Right. So up until these first stars, all the light in the universe came from the Big Bang. And it would have had single heat spectrum, as I mentioned before, black body spectrum, at about minus 200 degrees. So at this stage, a couple hundred million years into the universe, the Big Bang light is not very impressive. It's kind of wimpy. The universe really would have been dark, except for where these big stars are. But these big stars would have been super bright candles in the darkness. They would shine more than 1,000 times brighter than our sun. It would be blinding. So blindingly bright, in fact, that they would be able to split off electrons from hydrogen atoms or hydrogen molecules. So up until this point, when 300,000 years after the beginning of the universe, electrons, protons combined together to form neutral hydrogen, the universe would have been filled with neutral hydrogen up until these stars started to come in and break that up. This is notable because neutral hydrogen gas is actually detectable with telescopes. So for certain types of radio telescopes, the dark ages of the universe would have actually been very bright. And then once these stars started to appear, they would break up that neutral hydrogen. And what you would get is almost like a Swiss cheese universe from the perspective of these radio telescopes, where there would be a lot of neutral hydrogen around and then sort of pockets where it had been carved out and the radio telescope wouldn't be able to see it anymore. And that Swiss cheese universe would slowly get bigger and bigger. The bubbles would get bigger and bigger until almost the entire universe had all of the hydrogen sort of broken up again into atoms and electrons. It's a slow process. It likely would have taken over the course of like a billion years. The universe would have gotten down to about minus 250 degrees Celsius before it had really finished ionizing almost all of the hydrogen in the universe. And since this is the second time that all of the hydrogen was ionized, first before recombination, before the 300,000 years, and now after the Dark Ages, we called it reionization. It's been ionized a second time. And there's some really exciting experiments that are coming up that will hopefully be able to observe this time period from the perspective of watching that hydrogen slowly get ionized during the beginning of the universe.
All right. I guess this is a good place for a break. And when we come back, we'll see what else is brewing in the early universe. We'll be right back.
Hello there. I'm just stopping by to quickly let you know that the Queen's Observatory is always here to answer your space questions. You can find us on Facebook, Twitter, YouTube, and our website. Links to all of these are in the podcast description. We're always happy to talk about the universe, and if you ask a really big question, we just might have to do a podcast about it. I would also like to mention some of the other great resources out there. In the podcast description, you will find links to the McDonald Institute, the Royal Astronomical Society, and the Astronomy on Tap program. They are all excellent programs to bring the universe down to Earth. And with that, let's get back to it.
And welcome back to Queen's Observatory's Fast Radio Burst. We are talking about the first stars that would have formed while chronicling our universe. And certainly these massive, mega, giant, behemoth stars do sound very cool. I guess a question that's worth asking over here, Connor, is would these stars appear alone or would they have formed in groups? And if they formed in groups, what did these groups look like?
Right. So the early universe was kind of different from our modern universe. The galaxies would have still been like first forming. And it's unclear how, because we don't exactly know the properties of these stars, it's unclear how they would have interacted with each other, let alone how they would have behaved on their own. It's possible that whichever one sort of turned on first and was shining super, super bright would have heated up all the gas around them to the point that other stars didn't really form, and it was just on its own. It's also possible that a whole bunch of them could form in one galaxy. There's really more research to be done to know what that would look like. But whatever happened with the stars, the galaxies themselves would have been kind of interesting too. They didn't look like the galaxies that you might see in a Hubble image of today, of one of those very pretty giant spiral galaxies. It was a very different universe back then. First of all, I should be clear about like what a galaxy is. It's pretty much just an area with a bunch of dark matter. And it happens to also have gas and ideally some stars.
These behemoth stars.
Preferably these behemoth stars, at least at this point. So galaxies are really characterized as regions of extra density of dark matter that has sort of pulled in other material like the stuff that we know, which at this point is mostly gas and some stars. These galaxies, the ones that first formed out of little quantum fluctuations in the density spectrum of the universe, they would have been a lot smaller than the modern galaxies, and they would have sort of immediately gone into a titanic battle royale. So these galaxies would have been a lot closer to each other because the universe expands over time, which means going back to just a billion years after the beginning of the universe would be much more cramped. All these, there'd be many, many small galaxies all over the place in a smaller area. So they would immediately start colliding with each other and battling it out sort of to build up to be a big galaxy. Eventually, a big galaxy would be able to collide with smaller ones and just absorb them into itself. This process we call hierarchical merging. It's a bit more descriptive than Battle Royale, but less fun. but galaxies are very much cannibalistic. They eat other galaxies to grow. And so the beginning of the universe would have been a very chaotic time with lots of little galaxies colliding with each other and forming up bigger and bigger galaxies.
Yeah. A little bit of a pivot over here, Connor, but I guess today we know that each galaxy has one of these gigantic, massive black holes, or as we call a supermassive black hole at their centers. So when do these galaxies, which are first galaxies or baby galaxies, as we want to call them, get their black holes?
Yeah, so now we get to take out that pin from earlier. The first generation of stars is potentially where these supermassive black holes come from. So recall that these first generation of stars would have been something like 1,000 times the mass of our sun and would have shone thousands of times brighter than our sun. Again, I have to keep reiterating this. We've never seen one of these stars. We don't actually know that they behave like this, but we're hypothesizing at this stage. So the life of any star, no matter how big you are, is sort of a constant battle between the pull of gravity trying to crush it and the gigantic fusion engine at its core pushing out. Gravity will never give up. Gravity is always pulling down on these stars, but the fusion at the center can only last as long as the fuel that they have. The first generation of stars, if they act the way that we imagine, would have used up their fuel alarmingly fast. They would have been fusing at an incredible rate, and after only thousands, maybe millions of years at most, potentially even less, they would have used up enough of their fuel that gravity would start to win. And when the fusion core at the center fails to hold up the star, gravity would start to compress them smaller and smaller and smaller, and there aren't really any forces strong enough to oppose it. So it would kind of just keep going, and the gravity would be so intense, it would collapse into a black hole. And this process actually happens fairly regularly today. There are researchers who have observed many thousands of stars in the process of exploding and becoming a black hole during what's called a supernova. In fact, we actually took a picture of one of these supernovae with the Queen's Observatory. But the supernovae that we know of today are what occurs when a star around 10 or more times the mass of our sun collapses because its fusion ran out. And in these collapses, they create a black hole that's about one or two times the mass of our sun, but they also create a gigantic explosion that flings out the other 9 to 8 times the mass of our sun out into the universe. These first generation of stars at 1,000 times the mass of our sun, if they collapsed, they probably wouldn't have one of these extravagant explosions. They would just floop into a very big black hole about 1,000 times the mass of our sun. So that is one way that we could get the supermassive black holes in galaxies kicked off by sort of starting off a black hole at 1,000 times the mass of our sun, and then it could grow further. So the black hole, wherever it formed, would quickly work its way to the center of whatever galaxy it formed in, and it would start to feed off of other stars or gas that gets funneled in towards the center. We know that millions or billions of times the mass of our sun would eventually have to get funneled into the center of these galaxies, because today we see galaxies with black holes at their center that are millions or billions of times the mass of our sun. So we know that this has to happen. It's kind of like the inflation story. We know that something has to build up these black holes to be gigantic, but the exact specifics of it are a little fuzzy right now in an area of very exciting research, which I think Nick will agree.
Yes, I mean, black holes are just amazing. I love to talk about black holes. I think all astronomy discussions should end up with black holes, in my opinion. So I guess, Connor, now the universe is starting to look a lot more familiar. We've had these gigantic stars, thousand times the mass of our own sun, sort of blow up and make space for regular stars, if I can say that, make space for stars that we know of today in the universe. But along with those stars, a few other things would also happen, right? I do understand there's still the whole idea of Swiss cheesing the universe and talking about that. But how about you sort of bring us more to the present day today and talk about some of the things that we understand much better, such as formation of other elements in the universe and formation of planets and galaxies.
Right. So the discussion we've had so far brings us up to about 3 billion years after the Big Bang.
Only 10 more to go.
10 more to go. And now we can sort of fast track through that other 10 because we've sort of set up the building blocks. We have a sense of what the universe looks like now. And from this point on, star formation really picks up. Stars that are more familiar to what we know of in our night sky now. From this point for the next couple billion years would be the most active period of star formation in the universe. Every galaxy was in on the trend of making as many new stars as possible. So it would have been a time period where lots of new material would be created in the universe. We would be going from mostly hydrogen and helium to still mostly hydrogen and helium, but a lot of other stuff too. when stars do fusion and when they explode, they create and release a lot of other materials that we know and need, like carbon, oxygen, nitrogen, silicon. All of these things are created more or less around the life cycle of stars. And this period for the next couple billion years is really where that picks up. And during this time period and on, galaxies would start to settle into what we know today. The hierarchical merging process continues on even today, but it gets progressively slower and slower as there are fewer galaxies because they've all merged. And as the universe expands and pulls them a little further apart. So the kind of structures that we start to see are differentiation of galaxies into these early type galaxies, which is what astronomers call them. They're basically big balls of stars whizzing around each other in all directions. They don't so much form new stars for themselves. They more grow by colliding with other galaxies. And although they're all over the place, a lot of them exist in galaxy clusters, a even larger structure that would have hundreds or thousands of these galaxies all swirling around each other. And at the same time, if depending on the life cycle of the galaxy, it could also turn into one of these really beautiful spiral galaxies like our Milky Way, where instead of being a ball of stars whizzing in every direction, it's more of a disk of stars spinning around, almost like our solar system, where it's sort of flat. And these are the ones that you've probably seen pictures of. Hubble will take these beautiful pictures of these big blue star-forming galaxies, and they're the ones that have a lot of cool structures in them as well. Spiral arms, they can have these bar features near their center. There's lots going on. These are the sort of bustling metropolises where new stars are being formed. Yeah. You may notice I like these ones. So these new galaxies that start to take on more distinct structures than the tiny little balls at the beginning that would have just been colliding together and building up into bigger and bigger galaxies. These also have gone through many billions of years of star formation, and that star formation has released what astronomers call metals, what normal people call everything except hydrogen and helium, more material, more complex atoms into their environments. And this is where you can start to form rocky planets. Earth is a lot of oxygen and silicon and iron and nickel and heavier atom and carbon, yeah, and heavier atoms that had to form in some generations of stars before they could come together to form planets like Earth. So over the last 10 billion years up until today, that's also where you get to see the formation of planets like our solar system, which was around 4 billion years ago, 5 billion years ago, something like that. So at that point, now the universe very much looks like the universe that we see today. We've built up from a incredibly hot, super dense, trillion, trillion, trillion degree universe to today, where we have these all sorts of galaxies with different structures and lots of different material in them, interesting stars that can have planets orbiting around them. This is what we recognize. This is right. Sort of the last page yet written in our chronicle of the universe.
Yeah. I guess this is a great place to stop then. Fortunately, this is all the astronomy that we know so far to some extent. Of course, there are details that we have missed in the middle. And of course, those can make up for very interesting conversations.
Probably every astronomer would want us to stop at some point and explain their thing in much more detail.
Exactly. Yeah. But we have sort of run past the whole history of the universe. And I guess it's a fitting ending to this series. As I pointed out earlier, we'll be back with one more episode sort of giving you an update of what's the changes that are happening at the Queen's Observatory. But for now, it's bye from us here at the Fast Radio Burst. Bye-bye.
Yeah, we'll see you at the next episode. Bye.
Thanks for listening to the Queen's Observatory's Fast Radio Burst. We hope you enjoyed this walk through the universe. If you have any questions, don't hesitate to contact us via email at queensuobservatory@gmail.com. You can also follow us on Facebook and Twitter as the Queen's University Observatory to stay up to date. If you like this podcast, you can help us by leaving a review and sharing it with your friends. This will help us become more visible and spread the wonders of the universe to more people. That is all from us.